You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Man, we are back with another episode of NFL Players Podcast, and I am honored. And the ability to do this job and have this opportunity to meet guys like Mel Blount, who I have today, an absolute force of a DB, and somebody who I didn't watch play, saw highlights, saw stories. He's like a myth for a lot of us. So I'm excited, Mel, to have you. Thanks for joining us. And how you doing? Tell me where you're at and how you're doing.
Well, Logan, first of all, it's an honor. I've seen you play and admire your ability to play that position because, you know, I know what it takes to be out there on the corner. So it's good to meet you, and I'm doing great. It's been a great journey to be able to play 14 years in the league and walk away healthy, which is the main thing, and to continue doing some things off the field that's good in the community. So I'm great, man. I'm looking forward to sitting here having a chat with you.
What are some of the things you're doing in the community and you're doing now?
Well, great. I'm glad you asked. We and first when I retired from the National Football League, started the boys' home in Vidalia, Georgia, where I was born and raised on a farm, because I wanted the kids to experience the same kind of upbringing and work ethic that goes into living on a farm and taking care of animals and learning responsibility and things of that nature. So started that home in 1984, which you wasn't born at the time.
No,
I know. and so then 5 years later, 1989, we built a home outside of Pittsburgh,
okay,
a boys' home. And so we've been working with young people, trying to create opportunities for them, make them better. And so just recently, we just got involved with a major company who is a national company, Nexus Dental Systems, which really work with people, teaching them, identifying these people who have sleep apnea, which is a major problem.
Yeah.
Basically, one out of five Americans struggle with sleep disorder. And it's really something that we're excited about, because with us working with kids, we find a lot of kids with behavior problems and health problems, and it's basically can be traced back, and you find out it's related to sleep disorder, breathing issues. And so with this Nexus Dental Systems company, they're a national company that is focused in on people who having these issues and working to get them help. So we're excited about that and how that ties into the Mel Blount Youth Leadership Initiative with young people who are in danger and having these issues, you know, with the behavior problems and health issues. We want to identify those kids and get them help so they can grow and develop and be productive citizens.
Well, it's funny you mentioned sleep apnea, and I know that affects a lot of football players, larger people, right?
Exactly.
Larger human beings going out there, these O linemen, D linemen, and breathing and trouble, you know, sleeping and all that stuff. It obviously affects our demographic a ton.
Well, you know, we've had some of our great players like Reggie White had that problem and died from it. Cortez Kennedy. I mean, just to name a couple of guys. Yeah. But yeah, it's a major problem. And with Nexus Dental Systems, what we're trying to do is identify it and make sure people get diagnosed and get help. And the other thing is that with young people, you know, if we can identify these kids, get them help, it's going to help them physically. It's going to help with the behavior issues. And these are the things that the school systems are dealing with now, you know, especially in the inner cities, you get kids with a lot of behavior problems. And we think that we can help these kids by identifying them and getting that problem resolved. And so for people who want to learn more about it, you know, they can go to nexusdentalsystems.com and get information, or they can go to dreamsleep.rest. And get information. But that's just some of the things that I'm involved with. You know, I look around, Logan, I retired in 1984, and I'm really grateful for the career that I had in the National Football League. I'm grateful for the National Football League in general, because I think it's a great opportunity for guys like us who can use that platform to make a difference in our communities, make a difference on a national stage, but more importantly, we can make a difference in our families. And I think if every player, you know, start with his family to make it better, make changes for, and create opportunities, then, you know, it's just a great tool in the National Football League. With all its problems, you know, we still have something that we all should be proud of and try to work and protect it.
One of the players I played with who recently retired, the greatest player I played with, Tom Brady, he used to break down a lot of our huddles before the game, Super Bowl speeches, all that stuff. He was the man. And he always used to say a lesson that I would take from Tom Brady. He said, you play for that, you know, that name on the front as a team, but you also play for that name on the back.
Right.
But I always remember that when you just mentioned that players focused on their families and making a difference at home, it can change communities, it can change everything if you start, you know, right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously, we've witnessed a lot in the last couple of years, racial injustice, you know, the George Floyd incident, all these things. But it's one thing about sports that if people really look at it, it has done more to bring us together than anything else. And I think once we come together, I mean, when you talk about the locker room, you know, we don't look and say, well, he's black, he's white. It's, can he play? Can he help us? And if he can help us, then he's a brother, you know, regardless of, you know, where he's from.
Yeah, what's
and
going
on? So I think sports is a great tool that we can use. It's a great tool we can learn from, because when it's all said and done, it's about people working together and being able to accomplish something that everybody can benefit from.
So you're known to be mean on the field, or your style of play, or whatever is your feared defender in NFL history. But the philanthropic work that you do in the community, when did that start? As I interview people and as I get to be around greatness and great players, you start to realize really special people are doing everything on and off the field. They're special in every aspect of life, and I feel like you're one of those people. So when did the stuff in the community and all that, when did that start?
Well, I'm gonna take you back a little bit in history. And when I talk about history, I'm talking about history as a black man, as a young black youth growing up in the South doing segregation. I saw my parents in the community doing things and working. And anytime there was a problem, black folks would gather at the church because that's all we had. We didn't have country clubs or things where we could meet and discuss issues. So when you grow up in an environment like that, that becomes a part of you. You know, you see people giving back, you see your parents giving back, you see your parents working in the community. And so that's what I learned. So in 1966, when I finished high school, I couldn't go to Georgia or I couldn't go to Florida and a lot of the major white institutions. I had to get on a bus and go all the way to Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So when you talk about when did I start this, it was a part of my DNA because it's something I saw. And so, you know, kids, they see their parents do a thing, so they, that's what we're supposed to do. And so in 1968, when Dr. King was shot in Tennessee, I was on campus. And I remember to this day how vividly the students reacted. And thank God that we had a football court say that, I don't want you all out there in the streets looting, and you know, because if you do, you're gonna lose your scholarship. But what we could do was talk and lead and explain to these students why they shouldn't do this and why we should take a different approach. So that all that was a part of, you know, the things I had experienced growing up in Georgia, seeing how people do things and really having a broader perspective on events and really not reacting so much emotionally about things when they happen, but try to think through issues. And the one thing I can say about football and about sports is I think it helped us to do that. It helped us to, when something happened, it's not just an emotional reaction. You think through it and you figure out the best way to come up with a resolution for it. And I'm sure we can talk a lot about that from the position that we play, because you're exposed. You're out there, people could, you know, somebody catch a ball on you, they say, that's Mel Blount's fault. And so what I think is that you take all these things that you learn and every day you use it when situations come up.
Is that something you learned at Southern? Tell me your experience at the HBCU, Southern University.
Well, you know, Logan, let me say this. I talked about growing up doing segregation, and I talked about not having the opportunity to play at University of Georgia, Florida. But when I look back, it's the best thing ever happened to me. And I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world. The experience, really being around. When I finished high school, there were 28 kids who graduated in my high school class. That's how small the little town and the school was when I finished. It was 28 seniors. And but when I went to Southern University, at that time, because of segregation, it was like 15,000 students on campus. It was one of the largest black institutions in the country. But what happened was it broadened my horizon, my perspective of who we were as people. You know, I saw professional people, you know, whether it was the professors on campus or the president of the university or some, you know, professional in the community. And so it gave me a broader perspective of who we are as people. And so it was a great experience, and it's something that, you know, I wouldn't change for anything. And so what I've done, I tried to get that same experience. All three of my boys went to historical black colleges, graduated, gotten their degrees, doing great things. And the reason I bring all this up is because we need to be cognizant of our history because we've been lied to. It hasn't been told. And, you know, we come from a great lineage of people. Our history is rich. That part that we know, a lot of it hadn't been told, like we said. But I think what we're finding out is that this younger generation that's coming along, they're curious. They want to know more about, you know, why was there slavery, you know, and why was there segregation, you know, all these things, and why is it that, you know, the National Football League, we just witnessed it. What, 9 jobs or 8 or 9 jobs open, and we can't get a black coach hired, yet the National Football League is 70%+ black athletes. Yep. And so guys like myself, you know, who I feel, I came into the league in 1970. I think what we did in Pittsburgh, the 4 championships we won, we helped build the league. We helped make the league what it is today. And so are you going to tell me that we're good enough to be out there on the field and play, but we're not good enough to be in management and make decisions that's going to help grow the league and push it into the next century? And so there again, you don't react emotionally. You work through and you find ways to get ownership to see and understand, you know, from our perspective, how we see it and how we think that we can continue to grow the game. So that's
I mean, you're teaching us history. You're telling us your stories, and that's what I'm learning from, and that's what the viewers learning is through Mel Blount's experiences, and that's what your kids are learning, and my kids hopefully will learn is through my experiences, and it's being taught every day. Tell me about, I want to hear a story about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like you said, 4 championships in 6 years. What was your mentality or your mindset coming from Southern, getting, you know, going to the Pittsburgh Steelers organization? You obviously changed a lot of things over there and set a precedent.
You know, in 1970, I was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, but in that draft, there was a coin toss between the Steelers and the Cleveland Browns, because both of those teams was coming from the National Football League, from the National Conference, from the NFC over to the AFC.
Gotcha.
So there was a coin toss for the first pick. Pittsburgh won the toss. They drafted Terry Bradshaw, first player
they
pick.
They flipped the coin, literally.
And the first player picked in 1970's draft was Terry Bradshaw. The second player was Ron Shanklin, who was a wide receiver from North Texas State. And then the third player was Mel Blount from Southern University. Well, that was in 1970. Now, you got to remember what was going on in this country in the 60s, okay? In the 60s, the civil rights marches and movement. Yeah. I'm at an all-black high school, all-black college. I get drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. I never played with white athletes. I've never been coached by a white guy. Okay, so this was transition for me too, okay? And so, but anyway, we come to Pittsburgh. We come to a team that the previous year, in 1969, had drafted Joe Green. But they only won 1 game and lost 13 because they was playing 14 games back then.
Yeah.
And so that's why they were able to get the number 1 pick along with the coin toss. So when we got to Pittsburgh, if you were a Pittsburgh Steeler, around the city you were a joke. You didn't have no respect. Because the Steelers was known for bar hopping, drinking and going out, losing games, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't, and so Chuck Knoll came to the Steelers in 1969. He was with Don Shula in Baltimore. And so they came to, he was, the Rooneys hired him in 1969. He won 1 game and lost 13. And so we had a good draft. Something we could build from because we got that quarterback. You always need that quarterback.
You need that quarterback.
Yeah, but anyway, we changed that situation around. Within 4 years, we were in the Super Bowl and we won it against the Minnesota Vikings. And then the next year we went in 1975. So 76 we didn't win it, 77, but then we come back in 78 and 1978 and 1979, and we win the Super Bowl. So we win 4 Super Bowls in 6 years.
Something had to click though, right? Because you got there in the fourth year, like you said.
Yeah.
When did it click for you guys as a team where you're saying, okay, we go from winning one game to we should be in the Super Bowl?
Well, there was a draft in 1974 that put us over the top. But from 1970 to 74, you know, we got Bradshaw, we got myself, then we got Jack Ham, who was a number two pick from Penn State. But the big guy, in my opinion, was Franco. When they drafted Franco, we had the quarterback, we had the running back, then we had, they built that offensive line. And so in 1974, we have a super draft, you know, and out of that draft, we had, I think, 5 guys in the Hall of Fame with Donnie Shell, Stallworth, Lynn Swann, Mike Webster, and Jack Ham. All those guys in the Hall of Fame, that's out of that one draft in 1974.
That GM needs to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and then we had some other role players that was just great players,
yeah,
special teams, and playing backup. And so that kind of got us over the hump. And that's when we knew that we had changed the culture and built something special in Pittsburgh. And to this day, I think, I know that the organization is still benefiting from what happened in the 70s. Because there's a culture that has been put in place.
Standard.
Yeah, there's a standard, and there's a level of expectation, not just from the ownership, but from the city itself.
Yeah.
You know, our fans are, they love you, but they love you even more when you win.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah, they demand it.
Yeah.
The standard in Pittsburgh is a dominant defense, and I think your style of play, we're going to talk about it, right? So tell me about your style of play and how you... Your approach to the game and how you approach these wide receivers, because I think you change the game of football.
Well, when I came in, and I can say this, and I think it speaks a lot about organizations and about landing in the right place. When I came out of Southern University, I was basically a man-to-man guy.
Yeah.
Bump and run. I couldn't even tell you what a formation looked like, because I lined up on that receiver and I covered him if he went in motion, whatever he did. So I had to learn the game of football. I had to learn formations and I had to learn what people do from certain formations. And so I was just a physical talent that, thank God that the Steelers were, you know, building a program. I mean, if I would have went to a team that already had players in place, and I probably would have been cut or traded or something, but I landed in the right place, and we had the right kind of people around me to, you know, players need opportunities to grow and develop, and you don't grow unless you make mistakes, you know, and so I was able to get with an organization like the Steelers, and I was able to just develop, and it took time. I didn't really hit my stride until my third year, you know, and
you came in a league shadowing guys man to man, which, you know, to the viewer means,
yeah,
following that top receiver, that matchup you want to see, that Jalen Ramsey covering Jamar Chase. You were out there covering that top guy when you got drafted and following him man to man all over the
place. I came out of college doing that.
Yeah.
When I got to the league, I had to learn zone defense. I had to learn, you know.
Yeah, like I got him.
Yeah.
You know, ain't no film or ain't no playbook to look at. I got him.
And run support and all these things that require you to play out there on that corner. I had to learn that. So
that cat coverage.
Yeah,
when I came
into the league, I didn't start. We was playing 14 games back then, and I started in 7 of them. And I'll never forget, man, it was, you know, if you start, half the games, you get a $5,000 bonus, man. I mean, that was a lot of money back then, yeah. You know, shoot. So I'm like, man, I got to do something. So I was fortunate enough to start. And but as a rookie, I had a good year basically because I was playing special teams and I was running kickoffs back and running punts back. And so all that was a part of me and my contribution to growing and developing and being and making a contribution to the organization. But and at the same time I had good coaches who was teaching me about, you know, the formations and what they do out of the different formations. And so I'm very grateful for that. And I remember, you know, when people accomplish things, they don't get there by themselves. You know, and I can honestly say that there were so many people who helped me along the way, and I'm standing on a lot of shoulders of men and even women who, you know, helped me to get to it. If you would have told me when I left high school on a Greyhound bus going to Southern University that I would wind up in Canton, Ohio in the Hall of Fame, I said, man, you...
Four Super Bowls.
Yeah. Four, you know, and I never even, to win four Super Bowls, you know, I don't think any player come into the, or leave home going to college saying that he's going to go so he can win four Super Bowls in the NFL. It just, you know, you're just trying to get to college and you're just trying to make sure you make that team and get your lesson and being able to maintain your scholarship. And so it's been a great journey. And to me, icing on the cake was in 1977 when they made the rule change and named it the Mel Blount Rule because of my play.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the rules.
And so it's just been...
Rules before the Mel Blount rules? What were you allowed to do because you were handsy? You're known for putting your hands on receivers and disrupting their routes, yeah, down the field and being a defender and getting in their way. So what were the rules?
Well, the rules before they changed them was that you could jam a receiver all the way downfield as long as the ball wasn't
right
in the air, you know. And so I was 6'3", 205 pounds, I mean, and could run, physical guy. And so that's what I did. I just disrupted, man. I mean, and that was my intent, you know, and that was the mindset. They teach you back there, you got to be like a heat-seeking missile. You got to go search and destroy, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and then just being at the line of scrimmage. You know, I'm an old guy now, but my reach, you know, your wingspan. And that means a lot when a guy's coming off the line. If you can... You know, if you can cover a certain area and then slide your feet and get there where you got, you know, all your strength in front of you, it makes a big difference. And we had guys, I'm talking about, it's always been fast guys in the league.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they talk about these kids now. It's always been guys who can run. And the thing about it, we didn't throw the ball as much back then as they do now. You know, if you threw the ball 20 times back when I played, that was a lot because it was about pounding the football, mm-hmm, playing good defense. But yeah, that rule change, and I tell you, to be honest, when they changed the rule, I'll never forget, we played a Monday night game against the Bengals. Paul Brown, who is, you can call him the father of football or whatever, but he was a great football mind and the history of the game wouldn't be what it is today without Paul Brown. Well, he founded the Cincinnati Bengals and he was coaching that team. But we were playing them on a Monday night. And, you know, Isaac Curtis was a great wide receiver, fast guy, could run. But I was jamming him and, you know, he was having problems getting off the line. And then there was an incident where... one of their players had hit John Stallworth and, you know, kind of clothesline or something like that. So the next series, Trompe, who was a tight end, Ken Anderson was a quarterback. He comes, he runs a route out into the flat. Well, I'm sitting there, I'm in the cover two zone, so I'm jamming the receiver.
Yeah,
then I'm
the
coming
flat.
Off, sitting there in the flat. So here comes Trumpy. Ken Anderson throws the ball. Well, I react to it, hits the guy and breaks his jaw, not intentionally, but I'm just reacting to the ball. And
yeah.
My shoulder pass caught him under the chin and broke his jaw. So don't you know it, I get a letter from Pete Rozelle. They want to see me in the league office.
Uh-oh, so, they were fining back then?
Yeah. Oh.
So I didn't know the fine started back then.
Well, they didn't fine me, but they it was a warning. So,
yeah. That's a fine nowadays.
But the reason Paul Brown was on the, and I think was the chairman of the competition committee. And so it sent that film to the league office. They got in touch with the owners, the Steelers, and said, Mel Blount, he needs to come to the league office. So I go up there, and they're running this film back. I mean, I'm sitting in there with all the NFL officials, director of officiating, the commissioner, and some of his people. So they're running this film back. And, you know, back then it was... You know, it's like the projectors, you know, they run, they stop it, they run. And I said, run it back again. And so I said, if this play happens again, I'm gonna react the same way. And I said, until you all change the rules, this is how I'm gonna play. And I didn't think nothing about it. And so
famous last words.
It was a combination of footage we looked at with me jamming the guys coming off the line of scrimmage and that hit on Trumpy. And I just said, until you all change the rules, that's the way I'm going to play.
And then they changed the
rules. Don't you know they changed, and they call it the Mel Blount rule.
And the Mel Blount rule, is that the double chucking? I mean, you can't hit a guy, you can jam at the line, and after 5 yards,
after
you can't re-engage,
yards.
Right?
And before that rule was you could jam the guy all the way downfield, or anyone, if he's running his route and the ball hadn't been thrown, you could jam him, you know, jamming him. Even if you weren't covering him, you can jam him and get off and... But now after 5 yards, you know, you can't touch the receiver.
Yeah.
But the thing about that, they changed that rule in 1977. We still won 2 more championships after they changed the rule. So it wasn't like it affected me. It was that they wanted to make it better for the offense. They wanted to open the offense up. And Bradshaw, Stallworth, and Swan, they went absolutely. They ran rabbit through the league, man, because they were unstoppable because of that rule change.
You still were great. You still won 2 Super Bowls after the rule change. Put some respect on his name. How did the DBs feel? How did the other guys feel when they put this rule in because of you or named after you? And they're like, come on, man, now I can't play my game.
That's a good question.
How do they feel?
To this day, and this is not like. To this day, man, when these young guys see me, they say, man, you the reason we're having such a hard time.
Yeah, I'm like, we got to clear his name up.
Yeah, but
it's tough now, man. As you see, it's that times 10. You can't touch. When I came in the league 10 years ago and my rookie year, I was fortunate to play with Aqib Talib, and Aqib is big on the low shirt pulls.
Yeah.
When the receiver's at the top of the route, pulling himself through. Crossing routes, he would call tailpipe technique, where he'll run behind the receiver and give him a tug.
Yeah.
And that was big, and I was doing that a ton, and I learned that from Aqib, and I was getting interceptions off it. And then they kind of reemphasized to take that out, the low pulls. And Darrell Revis, I played with him my second year, won a Super Bowl with Darrell.
Yeah.
And he was so patient, from Pittsburgh, so patient, the line of scrimmage, and he would put that off hand on you, and he would keep it there. Mm. And then they started to... You can't keep the hand on him after 5. He wouldn't double chuck, but he would just keep it on him to feel him.
Mm.
And nowadays, you can't touch a guy. Top of the route, you can't touch a guy after 5.
Yeah. I think that right now in the league, it's fascinating. And to be honest, if I was a defensive back in the league today with my skill set that I had back then, I would love it because... You get opportunities, man. You get up. Like I said, if they threw the ball 20 times back in the 70s when I played, that was a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
So you're saying you got opportunities.
In 1975,
I had 11 interceptions. I led the league in interceptions, and they wasn't throwing the ball a lot.
Right.
So my point is, if you're going to give me all those opportunities, I'm going to get me some interceptions,
right.
You know, some kind of way, because I'm going to be ball hawking.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I like about the game today. I like the fact that, you know, you can still see. And I think too, is how you're being taught to play that position now. You know, 5 yards, if you can get up in a guy's face, you can jam a guy within 5 yards and still get off of him. But you
disrupt the timing.
The one thing you got to have, in my opinion, to play that position, you got to have speed. Then you got to have good feet, you know. And they say defensive backs can't catch. Well, I don't believe that. I was a wide receiver. I went to college as a wide receiver, but got switched because we had an injury in the secondary, and they asked me if I would play defense. I said, yeah, I can play defense. And they put me on the corner. And against Grambling University, our rivalry, Shaq Harris, who was the first black to really play in the modern day era as quarterback, played for Buffalo and then played for the Rams. I had 3 interceptions as a freshman against our arch rivalry. And so that jump started my college career.
Yeah.
And then coming into the league to be able to continue that. But back to this position and what's happening in today's game.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky, they're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boog. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be
That's
my
game. That's my game, bro.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I see a lot of bad techniques in man coverage. I mean, if a receiver cut his split down and you still going to line up on the inside of him? You know, he's got all this room out
here. Create all this space outside.
Just a little simple stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's angles. It's spatial awareness.
Right, because it is. It's a game of angles. Whenever you break on the ball, you want to break to the reception area. You don't forget about once that ball's in the air, you got to be able to judge it and see where it's going to land. If the receiver's still running deep, you know, you track the ball. That's when they talk about ball skills.
Yeah.
And you gotta know where that ball's coming down at and where that reception area is. If a guy is running an in route, an out route, a deep route. And all these things is, you know, just about having ball skills and having that ability.
That's interesting
And the number one thing, in my opinion, after the physical attributes, a defensive back has to have short memory.
Oh yeah.
And you have to be bold in your own confidence. You have to believe. I mean, if you go out there thinking you're gonna get beat, most likely you're gonna get beat. But if you're going out there saying, man, look, it's gonna be a dogfight today, you know, and I ain't losing, you know, and it's about that mindset, really. And I think of all the positions, and I respect every position on the field, but man, to be a defensive back, you got to be special.
Yeah, you do. With, like you said, the speed, the feet, and then the mentality. I compare it a lot to boxing, to being a boxer, because everybody thinks they can fight, but you have to train, and at the end of the day, someone's got to step in that ring, and you got to be willing to take those hits. You got to be willing to get knocked out sometimes to go win that battle, right? You got to go put your foot in the ground and say, damn it, I did my film study, and if he runs this, he got this foot up, and they under center, and it's going to be a hitch the first play of the game, I'm going to go get it. And if it's a double move, oh well, you know? You got to know how to take your bets.
Yeah. Well, you know, Logan, I've seen you, and it's really an honor to be able to sit here and talk to you, and I think you've had a great career, and I know it's even... You know, really, you're still kind of at the, you know, prime of your career, because a 10-year vet, I mean, you still got so much more to give if you want to. I mean, because you take all that knowledge and experience, and you know how to keep yourself in shape, and you know what's expected. So I'm looking for some great things out of you, and I'm claiming
when
this
I'm around
for you.
Your presence, I got to deliver. I love it. It's a lifestyle. You know how it is.
Yeah.
I'm running all year round. I'm a guy. I came in the league, played for Bill Belichick and the Patriots.
Right.
And it was all about, he wanted smart, tough football players who were versatile. I've started games in the slot. I covered some of the best slot receivers. I started on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Covering some top receivers in the Super Bowls, AFC championships, playing. When you have Brady on the other side, you got to deliver on your side. And then now, and with the Giants, I think last year I played snaps at outside corner, slot corner, strong safety, and free safety. So it's just about being a DB. It doesn't matter what position I line up at. I got to go get the ball, tap the ball, know my angles, know who I'm covering. The tight ends are receivers nowadays. The slot receivers are receivers. The outside receivers, I mean, these guys are running routes from all over, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because a narrative you might hear from guys in the game now is like, oh, you know, they're taking the physicality out of the game. It's all about offense. And the Mel Blunts and the Rodney Harrisons and these guys, they won't even be able to play in today's game because it's all about hitting and jamming. Yeah. And you're saying you would thrive in today's game because you have more ops. You have more passes thrown your way.
Well, what I'm saying is if you're an athlete, you can play an in-air.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. And I know that if I was playing today, I would probably be even better because there are more balls in the air now than there were.
That's a true
during
point.
The time when I played.
Right.
And if you are an athlete and you got ball skills, which I had, if you can catch the ball, if you can run, all these things that it takes to play out there on that position, I would love it. You know, it's really. Football now, man, I mean, I look at it, it's almost like 7-on-7.
Yeah,
you know,
slowly and sure, that's what they're getting
to. Yeah, the quarterback don't even line up under the center no more because he know he's getting the ball and he's throwing it. You just got to figure out where he's going with it.
Yeah.
And where he's going with it, your receiver's going to tell you, basically, what's going on. And so I find it
fascinating, but I also find it very interesting. Like I was talking about how guys play today. You know, a lot of guys are beat before the ball is snapped just by where they're lining up at. And so you got to be smart. I think that's, you know, when you talk about playing for guys like Bill Belichick, he wants smart guys. You have to be able to take that game plan, and then you got to be able to put your own spin on it based on your ability. You know, and it's obvious that everybody don't have the same amount of talent.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a given.
Yeah, there's everyone's talented, but there's dudes who are different.
Yeah, there's different levels.
Yeah.
And so the great players are going to always find ways to make plays that's going to flip the game in their, to their advantage.
It's the balance of doing what you're asked and coached to do, but still doing it your way. Because if the coaches could do it, they wouldn't be coaching. They would be playing, right? So obviously the coaches can't do it. They drafted you or brought you in and saw your talent. So it's always a balance of being yourself and fitting in the scheme.
And then the other thing is, there are reason guys are backups.
Bench players talking like starters, I hate it.
Hey, look. There are reasons some guys start and others don't.
Yeah, you start day one, you've been starting ever since. I've been starting for 9 years straight.
Difference in talent, but it doesn't mean that backup guy is not an asset to your team. It's just that, you know, got a guy here can do it better.
It's consistency, too.
Yeah.
You're right. You talk about going out there in DB, it's highs and lows like a baseball pitcher.
Yeah.
Right? And there's slumps and there's some days, but you still got to feel like you're the baddest man on the planet every week to consistently perform at a high level.
But you know, the thing I like too about the game is that you can't be bad too often.
Yeah.
If you do, there's somebody else, they can put somebody else in.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you can't do the job, we got somebody who can. And I think that's what make great teams is that you always got somebody pushing you.
Competition.
You always, the competition. And that in itself can create a good environment, a good atmosphere.
The great places, the great franchises, they keep the competition in the building and the players embrace it.
Exactly.
In New England, it was every day. Every year, I felt like they drafted somebody to take my job.
Yeah.
They brought a guy in. Everybody wanted to go to New England, especially a vet, to get a ring.
Yeah,
and I'm going to come in and I'll play, and they think, oh, I'm going to take less money. And they got to be willing to sacrifice, because you think you're going to come in and start right away. And I've seen Hall of Fame players come in and be on the twos in camp because they weren't playing the best that week. So it was all about competition. What I was bred into in this league.
Yeah, and I think Belichick, man, you got to admire what he's been able to do up there, and also how the players have embraced it, because it's a culture that it's been put in place, and guys know when they go there what it is, what's expected, and you know, and it's a great thing, and that's what great organizations do. It's the same in Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, I admire what Mike Tomlin has done. You know, even though now, you know, we got to find a quarterback, but he has done a great job. Never had a losing season, and that in itself goes back to our problem that we're dealing with today. Is why more African Americans should have
representation
to coach.
Yeah. So let's tell me about the corners today, because there was an era in the '90s where the corners got shorter, and you're a tall guy, right? Mm-hmm. And then the corners seem like they got shorter. Now they're like, this guy's 6'2", this guy's got long arms, put him in this type of scheme, he'll be great. But you were that size years ago.
Yeah, well.
So were you like the first one that big, or how do you feel about the cornerback and the size of a cornerback, and does it matter?
I think it matters. I spoke of it earlier about your wingspan. You know, how you gonna cover a 5'3" or 5'4" guy gonna cover Mudcap out there in Seattle?
Yeah.
I mean, if you got big receivers, and there's a lot of big receivers, Evans in Tampa Bay, I mean, just you can go around the league and find guys who are out there running routes, catching balls that are 6'3" or taller. So you got to have people to match up. And that's what the game is about. It's about how you match up with people.
Yeah.
And I think they're looking for those guys. I don't think there are a lot of them out there, you know, that are...
I'm a 5'11 guy. 6 foot with the cleats on. And the counter to that is, well, you got these Cooper Cups, you got these Tyreek Hills, you got these receivers, 5'9", 5'10". Can the 6'3" corner change direction with these shorter, shiftier receivers in the slot and out the slot?
Well, it goes back to ability. I mean,
right.
That you don't you won't just draft the guy because he's tall.
Yeah,
he's got to have something.
Got to cover.
He's got to be able to do something because your height is just an asset for you. But you got to be, and we talked about it earlier, I think the number one talent or attribute, in my opinion, is speed. You know, you got to have a guy that can run, but, you know, if you 6'3 and runs a 4'5", well, you're not going to be out there on the corner trying to cover nobody. You know, but if you're 6'3 and you can run a 4'3 or 4'4, you know, then you got an opportunity to be special. And so when you talk about the shifty receivers, the Cooper Cups, Tyreek Hills, all these kids, yeah, I mean, that's a different kind of challenge. But if you got defensive backs that can run, and if you got defensive backs that are physical, you know, you can offset some of that stuff.
You can nullify it.
And even if you got guys who can cover and that can run, football is the ultimate team sport. If you don't have somebody up front putting pressure on the quarterback, I don't care how good you are.
Yeah.
You know, so all these things, and that's why, in my opinion, football is such an awesome sport. And that's why people love it, because everybody, you can get 10 guys doing their job and one guy doesn't do his job, then you got a bad player.
You're out to dry.
Yeah. And so the game of football is so ingrained into our society. But sometimes I wonder if people are really learning from the game. The game can teach, you can watch the game and teach your whole life, just about life and about society, about how we all should work together and how it's so important that this guy be successful so you can be successful.
Adversity too, game, right?
And don't care what part of the country you come from or what you look like. You know, it's helping us all. And so that's why I think as Americans we're failing. We're not taking what we're seeing and learning from sports, how it can help us in society and how it can help us create a better society for generations to come.
Wow, powerful. I really appreciate you, Mel. I really appreciate this conversation today. It took a lot from you. And Mel Blount stamped and stated he would dominate in today's era. And I believe it too. 6'3", running a 4'3". But that don't fall off trees, man. That's a Hall of Famer. So I really appreciate your presence, man. I learned a lot from you.
Hey, thanks, Logan. It's been a pleasure, man. You're a great player, and good luck.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
God bless you.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us on the NFL Players Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and follow at NFL Players Podcast on Instagram for the latest player stories and to connect with the NFL players community.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.